Here we go. 3, 2, 1. What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast. We're live at SPATS, the South Padre Athletic Trainer Seminar 2016. So using hashtag SPATS2016, you'll be able to keep up with the pictures, the things that we send out. Israel Montano is periscoping live our little chat with Alicia. So again, hashtag SPATS2016. It is a great pleasure to be here. Miss Alicia Liao, welcome.
Thank you.
All right. So on the way down here, it's a six-hour drive for us. We came from Houston. You came from Dallas, probably even longer. So Bubba and I asked all these questions. They're would-you-rather questions. So I wanted to start off with, would you rather live life without knees or without elbows?
Without knees.
Why?
Well, because I can move around. I can put prosthetics on my knees, but without
elbows. Wait, no prosthetics. You have to just have straight legs.
Okay, I'm fine without knees.
No knees?
No knees.
All right, see, I told him I think I would rather no elbows for me. And so me and Bubba have decided, because he said no knees, I think we might do straight leg braces for him one day and like straight arm braces for me one day, and we'll see how we function and see what we pick. So.
Well, without legs, you can move around and do things, but without hands, how are you going to do most of your work? You couldn't type, you couldn't eat, you couldn't do lots of different things without your hands. But without your legs, you don't really need those much, you know?
See, but I would still have hands. I just wouldn't have elbows.
Oh, okay. So you'd be here.
So, yeah, just straight arms or straight legs?
I still
would rather elbows?
Yeah, stick.
All right.
Keep my elbows.
Fair enough. That's your choice. So we're going to have to try it one day, me and Bubba. So that's just to get us started, just for fun. One of the things in your bio, it was you're the coordinator for the Davis Mountain Conference.
Yes.
Okay, again, we're here, we're focused on SPATS, but I'm actually interested in possibly coming out there and doing the podcast one time from the Davis Mountains. It looks like something new, something that would be a nice area. Just tell me a little bit about the Davis Mountain Conference.
Well, yeah. Well, it's, again, three-day conference. It's out at Fort Davis, which is way west. So it's a pretty long drive for you if you're going to come from Houston. But it is it's similar to what SPATS is. We bring in doctors from all over the area, from El Paso, San Antonio, Dallas areas. We also get different athletic trainers to come in and speak. Pretty much functions just like this SPATS does. You know, we have morning talks, and then we have a break in between, and then they come back in the afternoon and do some more talks as well. We have our little social areas and things. Pretty much, like I said, most athletic training clinics are.
All right, and
then it's an unusual place because it's way out west. You'll get to go see Marfa and Sol Ross, which is an alpine. Even Fort Davis itself has different historical places. They have a Fort Davis. It's called it's Fort Davis is what it is. So
right.
And that's where the Buffalo soldiers worked out of and stuff. So you got a lot of history as well and tied up.
All right, cool. So if someone wants to find out more about the Davis Mountain Conference, how are they going to do that?
They can log on to the Davis Mountain Sports Medicine. I think it's WWF, the Davis Mountain Sports Medicine Clinic.
All right. Is it F Davis or?
No, just Davis Mountain.
Davis Mountain. All right, so check that out. And hopefully we can interact, and maybe, you know, in a few years I can come out there, bring the podcast.
That'd be excellent.
Something like that. So, all right. One of the first things that you said is everything happens for a reason. Now, you had an aneurysm, suffered a stroke while you were in surgery, but had you not basically passed out at the wheel, hit a sign that drove you off a cliff or off a hill through a ditch and into a machine, then you could have been in a lot worse situation than you were. Can you tell me a little bit more about why you said everything happens for a reason?
Well, because, again, had I not hit that sign, I could have instantly died while I was driving the car, right? That mm-hmm. aneurysm, either way, it's up there in my head. It's growing, and it could have ruptured in my head, and I could have died driving on the car, or I could have been doing an exam on somebody, and that could have busted, and I could have died. So, again, everything happens for a reason. There's a reason I hit that sign. There's a reason I hit that auger. There's a reason that everything happened, because God has a purpose for me. And I don't know what it is, but, again, everything happens for a reason, I think, for me.
Okay. My phone keeps going to sleep. Here we go. And so looking back now, what do you feel like that reason? Why do you think this has happened? What do you think that reason was?
I don't know, honestly. I had a couple of concussions beforehand, and that might have been when the aneurysm started. or it could have just started by birth. You know, the doctor said it had been growing anywhere from a year to 20 years up in my head. So, again, I don't know why it was up there. I don't know why I didn't have any symptoms prior to that. Like I said, I got up that morning, I ate breakfast, I got sick, and that was the first time I'd ever felt that way, which is very unusual. So, again, no idea why. But again, there's reasons that it happens to people, certain people and stuff. So I don't go over that, those issues and stuff. Mm-hmm. I know it happened. I had my surgery. I recovered from it. I was very fortunate to recover from it, and I'm moving forward. But I'm also going out and trying to advance the health care for other individuals as well.
All right. So for me, we had an athlete die a year ago in May. And from that, we've been working on creating a critical incident stress management team here in Texas. We've been able to begin working on an after action plan. So for me, again, I don't say that it's fortunate that that kid died or that I went through the situation where we performed CPR and the kid ended up dying. But I think there's a reason, because of the situation that I'm in with the podcast, with social media, that kind of thing, that stuff happened to me so that I can share. And, you know, there's literally people across the globe that listen to this, right? Because there's Caleb that we interviewed that's in China. And so he's going to hear your story and be able to do different things because of what's happening here. You said you felt sick in the morning. Is that a normal symptom for aneurysms or?
Yes. Again, it's a brain injury. Anytime you have a brain injury, you have concussion, you know, like a concussion. Mm-hmm. You have headaches, you have nausea, you have all those things going on. And this is kind of what I had. I had a little bit of headache, but not a major one. I did have some nausea and stuff, and that's what made me actually throw up. And I thought it was more the almond milk, because I'd never had almond milk before, and I thought that's what made me sick. You know, I eat almond milk.
Sick too.
That's not what it is. I eat almond milk every morning nowadays.
Really?
You know, so that's not what made me sick. It was just the whole the symptom from the aneurysm.
All right. Can you tell me a little bit more about the stroke that happened during surgery? Do you have any more details about how or why that happened? Or?
No, I don't know. The doctor told me that when he was doing the surgery, I actually had a brain bleed. Like I had a hematoma rupture. So I had a brain bleed up there, and it shut down the blood flow to my whole left side of my brain. That's what shut it all down and stuff. So he said he stitched it up, recuperated, and everything's going well now. But that's the only thing I know is it was a brain bleed up there and stuff. So, again, I was supposed to go and have my surgery. I was only going to be in the hospital for 3 days and get released after that and be back to normal and stuff. But because I had that stroke along with it, I think that's what intensified my recovery.
Okay. All right. You said you had friends come and visit regularly, but some of the friends that you've made at the rehab center that you stayed at didn't seem to have any friends coming. What did that mean to you to have people coming to visit you?
I thought it's phenomenal. I love my friends. I love the people that came up to see me, my coaches, my ADs, my principals and stuff. But, even when those friends came up to see just me, they actually got to interact with my friends that I made at the Peyton Clinic as well. Again, Peyton Clinic takes people from all over the country. There were people from New Orleans, people from, South Texas, North Texas, all over the place. So those people it was difficult for them to have people actually come and visit them all the time. I'm lucky that Peyton Clinic is only 15 miles away from McKinney. So those individuals could easily drive up and see me for the afternoon and see me, whenever they wanted to throughout the week. My friends that were in the clinic couldn't actually have those individuals come and see them. But I was actually able to share my friends with them as well. So I think that's what friendship is about. I'm really fortunate that I know so many people throughout the country, not just, in Texas, but Seattle, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, New York, Chicago, you name it. All my friends were sending me cards and letters and welcome wishes on the webpage and stuff. So, again, very fortunate to have those many individuals in my life.
All right. Obviously, we can't go back and change the way it happened, but how do you think your recovery process would have been different if you didn't have people coming to visit you?
I think I probably would have been okay with it because, again, I'm an independent person, and I would have still continued to do my rehab. I would have still continued to strive to be better. And the fact that I'm an athletic trainer, help me incorporate some of those exercises on my own. I could talk to my physical therapist and stuff, but I tell you, there's no way that I could have done it without my friends coming to visit and stuff, because that's an encouraging factor. You know, you have to have individuals to help you along the way to recover. And that's part of the rehab process, too, for somebody to come in and visit with you. I couldn't talk to begin with, but they're in there with me, and I'm trying to talk to them. They're trying to talk to me. We're trying to get things taken care of together. So that's very helpful, you know. So I think it's very important to have friends come and visit you and family come and visit you, because you have to have that nurturing effect to be able to recover. I feel anyway.
Yeah, and again, when our kid died last year, one of the big things was the athletic trainers in the area reached out to me, hey, if you need anything, you know, and some of them continue to check on me. And through me sharing my story, somebody's reached out and said, hey, we had this happen. So I've been able to continue to check on him because of me sharing my story. And again, you know, things happen for a reason. I agree, you know, and I believe that God put me in this position for that as well, is to be able to share it with other people. And so I'm glad that you shared that. You said that you had trouble putting words together, or like in your mind you were saying athletic trainer, but in your mouth you were saying biscuit. Now, what was that lady's name?
Melissa Harrington.
Melissa Harrington. Do you still call her Biscuit?
It's a joke.
So another one of the questions that we asked me and Bubba, again, 6-hour drive, lots of questions, was what are some of the funny nicknames that you had for friends growing up? And so that's just a funny story. You still call her Biscuit, and you said you call her husband. Do you call them like Biscuit and Gravy?
No, it's still a little joke. But no, I still call her Melissa, and I call him Charlie. But every once in a while, she doesn't answer me. I go, hey, Biscuit, what's going on? You know, those kind of things. So,
all right. Again, so they're working with your speech therapist. You got that worked out. What do you think is the most important lesson that you've taken away from the whole experience?
Probably empathy. I'm more empathetic now with my patients. Because, again, they had to show me how to do all the rehab. They had to show me how to recuperate, how to do my speech, how to walk, how to do all those things. And whenever you're doing rehab with kids, you're kind of pushing them forward to get better every day, but you forget that empathy part of it. You know, you forget that, hey, I know what you feel like. I've been through that process. So I think that's one of the biggest things for me is empathy.
Yeah, that's whenever you get hurt, then you go through the process. That's You learn more. You understand. You may not feel sorry for them. You may not like take it easier on them, but you at least understand the process.
Yes.
So you're better able to relate. And then you also mentioned there was 3 weeks where after you had returned to work, where your coworker had, I think you said, a deep vein thrombosis, and he was out for 3 weeks, and you chose not to hire a contract athletic trainer. Tell me a little bit more about why you made that decision and what was the outcome.
Well, again, it was right when we were doing basketball and soccer. It was actually more soccer than anything else. And I love soccer. I actually do. Nice. I volunteer for FC Dallas. I do their stretcher crew.
Nice.
And, again, we always have games on Tuesday nights and Friday nights. And normally what he and I do is we alternate. So on a Tuesday night, if it's his time to work, he'll work that day. And then if it's not, it's my day off. You know, so – but it's easy for me to work on a Tuesday night then get up and do a Friday night game as well. Again, it was more of something for me to be able to prove that to myself. I don't have to prove anything to anybody else. Obviously, I proved that I could recover from a stroke and be back at work, but it was more to myself to prove that I could actually fulfill those duties every day and be able to fulfill, athletic training as a whole. So I think it was more about that, not so much to prove to my ADs or my coaches and stuff. It's more for me.
Right, and then do you feel that was beneficial, or looking back, would you have made that same decision again?
Yes, I'd still do the same decision.
Okay, and you mentioned you are doing advocacy work for stroke victims now. So what are some of the things that you would like for us to know about, you know, symptoms of stroke, stroke recovery, stroke victims, long-term care of strokes?
You know, FAST is the biggest indicator, you know, the face, the speech and time. That, you know, all those things are important, and you have to know those things when somebody's actually having a stroke. But again, you have to have patience with that individual when they're recovering. You know, they may not be able to fulfill a sentence that they're trying to ask you something. They may be wanting a drink of water, but they don't know how to say, hey, I want a drink of water. Or they may want to be able to get up and go outside, but they can't tell you how to do that. Or even if you are working with them, you have to have patience to be able to walk with them. And sometimes we get irritated with individuals that aren't doing the things we want them to do as patients and as therapists or as caregivers, you know. So you have to have a better understanding between the two individuals.
All right, so when you were wanting to get a glass of water, were you able to, like, point towards the water fountain or toward, you know, like, point to the cabinet in the fountain, or were you able to write that out?
Was there? No, well, as more when I was in the hospital, I could actually just point to the dresser or to the I forget what those things are called.
Counter?
I don't know. No, the little table that they bring at the medical table that they bring. Point to that thing and they could give me the drink of water and stuff. But after I could speak, I could actually, you know, go and get it myself or say water and stuff. So little bitty things that I couldn't fulfill and speak and stuff. I remember when I went to the Perot Museum when I was at the Trills clinic, they actually kept me on one more week so that I could actually go with them to the Perot Museum. And Don and Melissa came to see me one day to pick me up to take me to dinner. And I said, yeah, I got to go to the Perot Museum and stuff. And they're like, oh, yeah, what'd you get to see? And I said, well, we got to see, and I kept doing this little movement with my hand. Like, we got to see these little things like this. And I kept trying to tell them dinosaurs, but I couldn't remember what a dinosaur was. So I kept showing them it with my hand, pointing it up like that. And they finally said, oh, was it a dinosaur? And I'm like, yes, that's what it was, a dinosaur and stuff. So again, they had patience with me as well. So,
gotcha. Is there any continued care that you're still receiving, like therapy once a month, or any like checkups that you have to do to continue to ensure you're still improving?
I don't have to do any rehab. I do my own rehab, my own walking. I make sure I walk 5 miles a day, and I, you know, want to encourage myself to continue to do cognitive therapy. Like, I play mind games. I do word searches. I read books. I used to read 5 books a month. That's a lot of books to read in a month. I would read 4 and read and listen to one on tapes. Now I'm up to reading 2 books a month and listening to one on tapes. So I'm up to 3, which is good. I want to get back to my 5 levels of reading. I also only have to go to the eye doctor. I just got through seeing him last week, actually on Mondays when I saw him, and he says I'm doing great. Then I'll have to come back and see him for another full year, which is wonderful because I was having to go see him every 3 months and so to check on that optic nerve. And then as far as my aneurysm goes, I went to see my doctor and got my angiogram in 2015, and he said I didn't have to see him again until 2017 because my stent is doing the job that needs to be doing up in my head. So other than that, I won't have anything else that I have to continue to do, other things that I'm choosing to do. Again, once you've recovered, once you get out of that whole healthcare system, most people don't do whatever they need to do to get better. There's like, okay, the doctor said I'm good, so I can go back and sit on the couch and lay back and do whatever. Everything's working for me. But that's not how I want to function. I want to continue to be an athletic trainer. And in order to do those things, I have to continue to strive to be better.
Gotcha. And you said you do the stretcher or did the stretcher crew for FC Dallas. Have you been able to go back and do that? Or?
Yeah. Actually, the very first stretcher crew that I got to do was in 2015. It was the Gold Cup. The men's soccer team, U.S. soccer team, came and played. I think they played Peru during the Gold Cup and stuff. So, yeah, that was my first time out to do the stretcher crew stuff. So I always tell everybody, you either go big or you go home. So I still go back and help them as well. I'm taking the time off right now from them because over the summertime I don't do anything with anybody. And then I'll start back up in either August or September with them again.
Very cool. If somebody wants to get a hold of you, what's going to be the best way to do that?
Probably email. It's diamondlil@gmail.com.
diamondlil@gmail.com. And then again, you said you're the coordinator for the Davis Mountains, which is davismountain.com.
Davis Mountain Sports Medicine.
If you Google Davis Mountain Sports Medicine, you'll probably find that.
Absolutely,
so,
yeah.
So look at that there. And, of course, we're here at SPATS 2016. Israel over there periscoping. I see you give a little wave to Periscope. So for the Sports Medicine broadcast, I thank you for being on. Thank you for your advocacy work with stroke victims. Thank you for sharing your story and in your belief that you were put here for a reason to accomplish a goal. And Alicia, I hope you enjoy the rest of your conference here at SPATS. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Bye.